You're listening to PetLifeRadio.com.
Is your pet stressed out? Does your pet need annual vaccines? Which pet is best for a child? Would you know if your dog was in pain? Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor, where you'll learn everything about keeping your pet healthy and happy. From pet care, pet meds and grooming, to pet food, pet insurance and dental care, this is the place to find out everything there is to know about pet wellness. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets, because it's your pet. Health matters. Please welcome your Pet Doctor host, veterinary media consultant and veterinarian, Dr. Bernadine Cruz.
Eat first, think later is the mantra that many dogs live and sometimes die by. Cats tend to be more cautious, nibbling on novel food offerings, being wary while venturing through their environment. Cats often are found snoozing while their canine housemates are being whisked off to the animal emergency clinic because one of those doggy duh moments. But cats can also find themselves in need of urgent medical assistance. April is National Pet First Aid Awareness Month. My guest is Dr. Diane Eigner. She is the immediate past president of the Catalyst Council. Together, we're going to discuss some of the common medical predicaments our feline family members find themselves in and what we can do to help. We'll be right back after this short break.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
Petco, where the pets go. Petco, where the pets go.
Pet Life Radio has tail wagging, fur flying, fabulous deals for our listeners from Petco. Get $6 off your order of $60 or more and up to 40% off the entire Petco site.
That's right.
But that's not all.
Because you're a Pet Life Radio listener, you'll also get free shipping on your order of $49 or more. $6 off, up to 40% off,
and free shipping
from Pet Life Radio and Petco. To get these awesome deals, go to PetcoDeals.com. That's PetcoDeals.com.
Petco, where the pets go.
I'm not much of a reader, but I do wish I were more well-read.
There are so many great books coming out. I wish I could find a way to keep up.
Audible.com makes it easy to stay well informed and catch up on your reading simply by listening. Audiobooks from Audible turn downtime into uptime. You'll be more productive and become well-read.
Now I'm able to catch up on all the great books I've been wanting to read.
With Audible, I feel smarter.
Pet Life Radio listeners, try Audible.com now and get your first 30 days of Audible Listener Gold Membership plan free. And get a free audiobook. Choose from over 100,000 titles. To get this great deal, go to audibledeals.com. That's audibledeals.com.
This year, Americans are expected to spend a jaw-dropping $36 billion on their pets. From lighted leashes to high-end spa products, the discriminating pet owner can find just about anything to pamper his or her pet. Hi, this is Michelle Fern. Join me every week for Best Bets for Pets, where we'll talk about the latest pet products and talk to the companies that make them. Best Bets for Pets, every week, only on PetLifeRadio.com.
Let's Talk Pets on PetLifeRadio.com. Welcome back to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio with Dr. Bernadine Cruz. The doctor is in, and we'll see you now.
Dr. Eigner, thank you very much for being with us. And number one, let me wish you on air a happy birthday.
Oh, thank you.
Well, being the past president of Catalyst Council, first of all, tell us, what is the Catalyst Council?
Well, the Catalyst Council is a national initiative comprised of animal health and welfare organizations whose vision and mission are to ensure that all cats are valued and cared for as pets. We feel that this can be accomplished by raising a level of care and welfare of cats and support the highest quality of veterinary care, preventative medicine, and products that are specific to cats.
I find it very interesting because I know in my practice, at least on our records, we have more cat patients than we have dogs, but we see our dog patients more frequently than cats. This is pretty much a national phenomenon, isn't it? Yeah, why do you think so?
Well, you know, we know that, I mean, even think of dogs, you know, you take their leash out and they're jumping up and down for joy. They can't wait to go outside. And most dogs, as you know, love to go for car rides. And frequently they're actually pretty happy at the veterinarian. So when an owner of a dog thinks about taking it to the veterinarian, there isn't this immediate psychological barrier of taking their dog out. But with a cat, I think almost immediately owners start being concerned about how am I going to get the cat in the box, she's going to cry the whole way there, and then often when they're at the veterinarian's, cats are scared, and it isn't always the most pleasant experience for the cat. So that's kind of a natural barrier, and it's one of the reasons why the Catalyst Council has developed resources to help owners learn how to get their cats comfortable with carriers and maybe create a situation that's a little more, you know, cat-friendly and a little more pleasant for the cat. So cat owners will then more frequently consider taking them in for care when they need it.
And I have two cats myself, and I try to trick them sometimes when I need to take them into the practice for one reason or the other, and I'll not even bring the carriers in the house. I'll leave them in the garage, or I'll bring the carrier out several days ahead of time, and they look at me, and they're so good at reading our body language. It's like, mommy is doing something today that is not good. I start closing doors, whatever. And two kitties will sometimes hide in places I had no idea they could. What are some suggestions? I know we're talking about pet first aid, but all right, we need to get them to that veterinarian. What are things that people can do ahead of time to not have the terror of the carrier?
Well, I think you want to start with, you know, the first thing that should be done is that when you purchase a carrier, do your homework and try to find the carriers that are ones that are going to make it not only easy for you to get the cat into the carrier, but allow the veterinarian to possibly even perform a portion of the exam in the bottom of the carrier. Since, you know, even though maybe a cat at home doesn't want to get into a carrier frequently, at the veterinarian's office, they actually feel a little more comfortable in the bottom of their carrier since that's already a little familiar and has their scent in it. So you want to start by getting a carrier that is good, we think, for making for a cat-friendly visit. And the ones that we like the most are the ones where the top can come off, the hard plastic shell carriers, where the top can easily come off. So again, you could even possibly do your exam in the bottom of the carrier if you were a veterinarian. The soft-sided carriers, I think, aesthetically are really pleasing, and owners love the variety of those carriers, but actually the hard shell plastic ones that I'm referring to are our preference. And we have videos of these types of carriers and how to get cats into carriers on our website. So I urge your listeners to go to www.catalystcouncil.org and see the, you know, the materials we have there that can help them select the right carrier and then get their cat in a carrier. It also helps to leave the carrier out. It may not be the most aesthetically pleasing thing to have in your home. It may not match your decor, but if there's a way to get the cat to not be afraid of the carrier, you know, where it actually might even seek it out to sleep in it, that's our preference. And it can also be helpful if you missed a towel or a blanket with fell away a good 30 minutes or so before you place your cat in a carrier. It can help provide some of a calming effect when your cat is in the box.
You mentioned feel away, and that is the synthetic pheromone, that kind of happy scent that kitties get off as they rub against our leg or rub on things that are trying to mark it as theirs. It makes them feel more common. I totally agree. There are what we've started doing now in my own practice. You're exactly right, is leaving the cats in the carrier. They always seem so surprised when all of a sudden you're unscrewing that hard clamshell top and you open it up and they look at you like, huh, how'd you do that one? And then they just kind of snuggle on down. We'll usually throw a towel over them that has been previously sprayed with some of this feel away. And we even have just the diffusers in our exam room. So the owner doesn't notice it. The dog could care less. But the kitty comes in as kind of like aromatherapy for cats. It does seem to help.
Yeah, we have them in our exam room as well. And something I learned probably only in the last couple of years is that there is alcohol in the fell away spray that cats don't actually like. So you want to try to mist it a good 20 minutes or so before the cat's going to be either held with blankets, you know, that are scented with the fell away or in a carrier, because you want that alcohol to have evaporated. Cats don't tend to like that alcohol smell. So that's a little tidbit that I didn't even know myself that I can share.
Good idea. Little teetotaler kitties. Don't want it in their eyes, don't want to breathe it in. So we're talking about pet first aid, what are some of the most common medical emergencies that are seen across the United States?
Well, probably one of the most significant problems that we all worry about would be male cats who can't urinate. And it's just very important for all owners of male cats to understand that if a cat is frequenting its litter box and not able to pass urine, or looks like it maybe is constipated, it's more likely that it can't pass urine. And if they watch the cat for a number of hours and no pee is coming out, then they really need to get their cat to a veterinarian as soon as possible. There isn't really something that owners can do at home. But there are lots of other types of things that do happen to cats where owners can provide some at-home first aid. Something as simple as a cut, like a, you know, not a, a real deep laceration, but a little cut that could happen either because of aggressive play with a cat's housemate, or sometimes, unfortunately, cats can be cut accidentally when owners are trying to clip out mats and have the scissors placed in the wrong location. So owners, you know, if there's a laceration or a scratch, can clean that area with a nice, clean, sterile first aid pad. If it's bleeding, they can put pressure on the pad for about 10 minutes, gentle pressure. And if there is bleeding that doesn't seem to want to stop, then they can just elevate the wound if they can, which should make a little bit of a difference. And then, of course, seek veterinary care. Most of the time, we don't want cat owners to put bandages on cats, though, because they don't tolerate that very well.
And they don't stick very well to fur, too. There have been many a times I'll put on this gorgeous bandage on a paw or on a cat or a dog, and, oh, this is just perfect. And then the kitty walks out the door, the dog walks out the door, shakes its paw, and there goes my bandage. It's like, really good, doctor. I have to try that one again. You brought up something that I have to admit, cutting the skin accidentally while trying to cut out a mat. I used to, under my breath, somewhat scoff at my pet owners who'd bring in a pet. And they said, you know, I was just trying to cut out a mat. Thinking, boy, if they were just more careful, it wouldn't happen. And then one of my own cats got into some paint and I was trying to very gently pull the fur and cut that little mat. And then all of a sudden I realized, oh no, I cut the kitty. And then I had this awakening, like, duh, this makes absolute sense. If we get our own hair cut, a hairdresser will put the comb under where in the hair, closer to our scalp, and then cut on top of it. And it's like, huh. So now I'll always tell my clients my story about me accidentally cutting my own pets, putting the comb under that mat as close to the skin as possible, cutting on top of the comb away from the skin. And if you're left with a short little mat, you can usually just break it apart with your fingers.
Right. It's kind of the same kind of concept when you're cutting nails. You know, you want to make sure that the nail clipper, the blade that you can't see that's closer to the cat, that's not too close to where the blood supply is in the nail. And sometimes, very accidentally, they'll be paying more attention to the side of the nail clipper that's close to them, you know, and they don't really realize where the clipper is. So that's another place where people sometimes make a mistake. But definitely having your fingers close to the cat with the scissors, you know, in front of your fingers, not closer to the cat, is what you want to do if you're trying to trim out a mat.
Well, I know that many people will have things like lilies in the home. And I think a lot of people aren't aware that lilies, Easter lilies in particular, just a small amount can cause problems. Could you elaborate a little bit on that one?
Yeah, it's actually really, really scary because it doesn't take almost any amount. I mean, it's the smallest amount that unfortunately can lead to very, very serious damage of the kidneys in the cat. The pollen, the leaves, the stems, I mean, it's just a basic flat-out no. You cannot have any lilies in a home where cats live. It's unfortunate because the damage that gets done is happening quietly. Your cat may not vomit, may not give you any indication that anything is wrong until the kidney damage is done. It has to do with metabolite that ends up injuring the kidney, and it's not something that can be reversed. So ultimately, it means no lilies. And for that matter, really every cat owner should visit like the poison control sites and other resources where they have lists of poisonous plants to make sure that any plants they do bring in will not cause any serious damage to any major organ systems. Almost any plant, if a cat nibbles on it, you know, might cause a little GI distress, but cats can get over, they can get better from that. They cannot get better from lily toxicity.
Now, are they all type of lilies? I know lily of the valley is a problem and Easter lilies, but how about day lilies and some of these others?
You know, I'm not sure, but I think that all variety, I think almost all varieties are bad. I think peace lilies are really bad too. I just wouldn't take any chances with any lily.
I totally agree with you. Several months ago, a friend of mine, just meaning the best, gave me this gorgeous floral arrangement for thanking and helping her out. And it had these beautiful lilies, stargazer lilies. And it's like, sorry, I can't even have them in the house. Couldn't even take them to the office and have anyone there just for fear that some cat would somehow get exposed. So gave it to a dog owner friend of mine and said, here, your dog should be just fine with this. What are some of the other common indoor dangers? Again, usually cats aren't as bad as dogs. Dogs seem to get into everything. Cats aren't as bad, but what are some of the other common indoor toxins or poisons kitties can get exposed to?
So the good news is, as you hinted at early in the program, cats are pretty discriminating. So they're not as likely to do something silly like eat, like rat poisoning or something that an exterminator might put down. It can happen, and we still recommend that those things are not put in areas where cats are going to be frequenting those spots, but it's just not as likely. I think that, you know, cats can get in trouble if you have decorations that are precariously balanced in the house in a way that if a curious cat jumped on it, it could fall on them and, you know, create trauma. I remember a patient that unfortunately, the young kitten that died when a stereo speaker was pulled down on top of it. The woman had placed a decorative kind of lacy piece of fabric and the kitty was playing with it. But, you know, the story did not have a happy ending when this kitten was injured. So you just want to kind of look around the house and make sure that you almost, you know, kitten-proof your house is what I tell my new kitten owners, almost like you would toddler-proof your house. So you want to look for things like that. We all know that cats love to play with string, and unfortunately, needles and threads can be things that cats can decide they're very interested in. And there's many a cat that has swallowed thread and then needed surgery because it can cause a gathering of the intestines and can do some real damage. So I always caution owners that if they're doing any minor sewing at home, to always make sure that if they, let's say, are watching TV and sewing and they get up to get themselves a snack, to make sure that they secure the needle and thread and put it somewhere where the cat can't find it. And on that line of things that can cause trouble when cats swallow them, something as simple as dental floss that hopefully most of us are using nightly, you want to make sure when you throw it into a trash can that you wrap it up in a piece of tissue, something that the kitty won't be able to unwrap, so that it'll be less likely that the cat or kitten would take a bite or swallow. So those are a couple of things.
You're exactly right, Dr. Eigner, that trying to pet-proof a house, I think, is almost logarithmically harder than child-proofing a house. Kids don't seem to get into half the dangers as cats and dogs can. Even something as little crawl spaces. When I got my kitten, who's now 2 years of age, when I brought her home the first day, you know, I had everything closed off and everything was safe and I checked over and under and I thought everything was fine. And after having her here in the house for about an hour, I couldn't find her. I looked in and under in toilets, though I knew there was no way that she could have crawled in one, but I was just panicked. And finally, this little crawl space under some cupboards, she had found this because she was itty-bitty, and she just scooted in there, and thankfully, she came out, and I didn't have to pull the cupboard away from the wall. But I know sometimes that does happen. And you also mentioned rat bait. Yes, kitties typically aren't going to be nibbling on the bait, but I've run into situations, I'm sure you have also, where all of a sudden there's a rat or a mouse that may be just on its last little paw, and the cat goes, hey, this is easy to catch. This is pretty good. So they catch it, they may ingest it, and now the toxins have become so effective that it not only kills the rat or the mouse, but it also has the same effect of basically turning that cat or dog into a hemophiliac, a bleeding problem.
Right.
And sometimes you have no idea that they got into this, so you have to be so, so careful.
Yeah, you have to be really careful, especially, you know, when exterminators come in, you have to make sure they know you have a cat. They do have chemicals that they know are safe around cats, so it's important for cat owners to ask questions.
We're talking right now to Dr. Diane Eigner. She is the immediate past president of the Catalyst Council. We're talking about kitties and ways they can get themselves into dangers and what we can do to keep them safe. We're going to be right back after a short break.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
Every pet is unique. Maybe they're gray in the muzzle, yet young at heart. Maybe they're growing out of the puppy stage and into their paws and ears. Or maybe they're just trying to maintain a more girlish figure. At PetSmart, we have the right food for your pet at a great value for you. PetSmart. Be better together.
Go to PetLifeRadio.com/PetSmart and save up to 30% on toys, collars, leashes, PetSmart gift cards, treats, and more. Go to PetLifeRadio.com/PetSmart today.
I don't make any decisions about who to hire without going to Angie's List first.
You'll find reviews on home repair to healthcare written by people just like you.
With Angie's List, I know who to call, and I know the results will be fantastic.
Angie's List. That you can trust.
Go to AngiesList.com/best and get 25% off any subscription. That's AngiesList.com/best. B-E-S-T.
Dyson.
The new Dyson Animal Vacs are powerful bagless upright vacuums for homes with pets. Air muscle and radial root cyclone technology generates the strongest suction power to powerfully remove dust, dirt, and pet hair from the home or car. To order your Dyson Animal Vac, go to PetLifeRadio.com/Dyson. PetLifeRadio.com/Dyson to order your Dyson Animal Vac today.
Dyson, music to your ears.
Hi, everybody. I'm Megan Blake here with my sidekick, Super Smiley, the giant mutt and spokes dog for throwaways. You're listening to Pet Life Radio, and I'd like to tell you about our brand new show, A Super Smiley Adventure. Our show explores adventures with animals. They can be traveling, out in the world trips, or inner journeys where our animals lead us to inspiration and self-discovery, or just plain fun adventures. Join us here on Pet Life Radio on A Super Smiley Adventure. Good boy.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio with Dr. Bernadine Cruz. The doctor is in and we'll see you now.
Dr. Diane, okay, it is springtime, and right now I'm living in Southern California, and it is beautiful outside. And I was out there having lunch, and I'm watching my young cat just crawl through all these various flowers, and there's bees. And it's like, oh no, honey, you're going to get yourself stung by a bee and trying to protect her. But sometimes it just happens. What are some of the signs that people can see if a cat has an altercation with an insect, and what can they do?
Probably what they're going to notice is that the area where the kitten or cat was stung is going to swell, and it's not uncommon for that to be like on the nose or somewhere on the head. The first thing they can do is, if you think they've been stung by an insect, inspect the area, and if you find a stinger, remove that stinger by gently scraping your nail or something firm at the corner of a credit card or license along the skin so they can try to flick the stinger out. Then they want to apply a cold compress for a few minutes and make sure that they're paying attention to how the cat's breathing, because what we want to do is look for signs of an allergic reaction, which would possibly change the way the cat's breathing, because there could be swelling that would interfere with the normal respiratory efforts. And even if the cat seems fine, I'm going to make a general recommendation to head to the veterinarian just in case, because I know at my practice when we see cats when there's been a suspected insect bite, I tend to give them Benadryl just to be on the safe side. You know, I just don't want an allergic reaction happening when they're not able to receive veterinary care. So I think that's a general rule of thumb. If you think your cat's been bitten by an insect or stung by a bee, to head to the veterinarian once you've done the things that I mentioned.
one of the insect stings that we typically are not going to see, and too many people are not aware of the possible complications, is heartworm disease. I know when I went through veterinary school, we learned about heartworm disease, and it wasn't that many years ago, and we learned about it being a dog disease. Cats didn't get it. You didn't really have to worry about cats. And research has just dramatically changed how veterinarians and now cat owners, how they have to think about heartworm disease. Could you discuss it a little bit, please?
Yeah, it's a really scary disease because in the cat, since it's not supposed to be in the cat, it's really a dog parasite, it does some really bad stuff. And it doesn't do great stuff in dogs either, but it's a really nasty infection when it gets in the cat. The good news is that most cats, if they're bitten by a mosquito that has bitten a dog and then has picked up the microfilaria, which is the stage of the life cycle when an animal can be infected with heartworm, the good news is in most cats, the immune system gets mobilized and nothing will happen at all, and the owners will never know, and the cat will go about its business and nothing will happen. But unfortunately, sometimes it gets past the cat's immune system, and then, like I said, because it's in the wrong animal, it does some really bad stuff. And what we know is that probably the worst effect it has is on the vessels in the lungs, in the pulmonary system, and they get this really, really allergic kind of inflammatory reaction that can mimic asthma, but can be so bad that it can even cause sudden death. The sudden death is usually associated more when the worm that actually survives the immune system and makes it up into the heart and in the lungs dies, and then there's this fulminating reaction, and unfortunately there are cats that will pass away. So whenever veterinarians hear of sudden death in the cat, it's something we think about. We think about heartworms. What I try to do is not scare owners, because, you know, the thought of sudden death, of course, is terrifying to all of us who love cats. But what I try to do is make sure owners do an honest assessment of their cat's risks. You know, if you live in a part of the country where there's zero mosquitoes and you have nothing to worry about, if you have an indoor cat and you are completely convinced mosquitoes never get in, then it probably is okay not to treat your cat. But there aren't that many places where that is true. And since we have these incredibly safe and user-friendly products now that take care of all parasites that the typical cat would be exposed to, including heartworm, it's a no-brainer for me. I recommend probably 98% of my clients, I recommend that they should be treating their cat monthly when there's mosquito exposure.
I totally concur with you. Being here in Southern California, thankfully, the prevalence of heartworm disease in cats and dogs is quite small. But, you know, say, well, you know, my cat never gets outside. Uh-huh. All kitties seem to be able to escape one way or the other. Or mosquitoes never come in. It's like, well, have you ever seen a fly in your house? Well, yeah. Well, if a fly comes in and it's bigger and it usually is much more obnoxious than a mosquito, you never know. So I agree with you. I think it's so much safer. Be on the safe side. Have your pet on the medication. And you're right. Liquid that you can apply to the skin, medication that you can give pill-wise. Ah, it's so easy and it's so much safer for our cats, because many times it can just look like a hairball. Is it asthma? Is it hairball? Or is it heartworm?
Yeah, and you know, and it's just a dreadful disease because we don't have a good way to diagnose it, and we really can't treat it effectively. So I think the bottom line is let's prevent it. And these products are not that expensive. We're talking about something that would be as little as maybe $10 or $15 a month to keep the cat safe. So I highly recommend all cat owners treat their cats monthly with these wonderful products. Very lucky. Cat owners are really lucky that we have such great and effective and easy to administer products.
And that's so important, that word easy, because my own cats do not believe that it says DVM after my name, and trying to treat them can be just as harrowing as I see some of my clients. So yes, easy is so important when it comes to kitties. Dr. Eigner, the weather has just been awesome. Now, I'm here in Southern California, and most of my neighbors don't live in high rises. But I get scared because I'm in a two-story condo, and every once in a while I find my young cat walking on one of the banisters. It's like, please get away from the banister and don't do this, because I don't want a broken leg. But there are stories of cats falling from just many, many floors up and surviving these floors. I know there's kind of a critical area, and I don't really remember, maybe you remember, as to below certain feet, they tend to have broken bones and broken hard palates, but somehow they survive. Do you know some of the reasons why?
Well, you know, I watched a video just the other day that showed a cat falling and how they right their bodies and orient themselves in a way that then when they hit the ground, they don't experience the severity of trauma that they would if they weren't able to right their bodies. And I don't know if it's, you know, from like one story to 10 stories that it's likely that they survive, and then above, I think 28 stories they'll survive. But it's that I think it's along those lines. And what's fascinating is if they fall in that middle, which would be like between 10 and 28 floors, they don't often survive, and it has to do with their ability to orient their bodies. It's pretty fascinating, but of course, fascinating can still mean that it's upsetting if a cat has to experience that high rise syndrome. So ultimately, it means that if your cat likes to sit by the window, you're going to want to make sure that those screens are really, really secure. You might even want to put some bars on the window if you aren't sure that you can secure the screens.
I've actually heard also of using hardware screen, somewhat along the line of that material that you can put on a sliding glass door screen door where dogs will sometimes scratch at it. So you can apply this and you can still get the airflow. You can still see out. It may not look the best, but it's so much better than having a cat that goes tumbling, because not all cats read the paperwork and say, oh, I'm between this many floors and I'm supposed to survive. They may survive, but still be very badly injured. You still definitely need to scoot them into the veterinarian. Now, if a cat tumbles or has some type of a medical situation, what are your suggestions for approaching this kitty who's now scared and maybe hurt and you need to get it to your veterinarian?
Well, you know, I'm glad you mentioned the fact that there's scared, because, you know, cats are not naturally mean, and they wouldn't hurt a person usually because they plotted and schemed to hurt a person. They just get scared and then they go on the defensive. So if a cat has fallen and it's uncomfortable, it might lash out and might do some damage. So you'll want any time that there's been a trauma to use a towel or put on gloves if you're going to have to move a cat who's been injured. But you want to try your best not to really allow the cat's limbs and even its back to really move a whole lot, because if there are some broken bones, the bones, if they have sharp edges, can actually do damage. And so you're going to want, if possible, to slide something solid under the kitty and then maybe be able to lift it up and put it in a carrier or box to provide some support. And then as fast as you can, of course, transport the cat to a veterinary facility.
And know where that emergency facility is, because oftentimes it seems to happen on weekends, the middle of the night, sometime when your veterinarian may not be open. So we have the best of intentions sometimes. Oh, yeah, I'm going to find where that local emergency clinic is. And you never do until all of a sudden you need it.
Yep. Yeah, I always try when I get a new client who moves into Philadelphia and comes to my hospital, I make sure they learn where the Penn Veterinary School is, and they make sure they're aware where it is when they're calm, not when they're anxious, you know, so that if they have an emergency, they know where to go.
And keep those numbers in your phone, by your phone, all those places when you need it, because otherwise you can never find that business card when you need it also.
Yep, that's right.
First aid kits. We've been talking about first aid month and being aware. I tell people that typically they can use their own first aid kit that they can make cat and dog friendly. What are your suggestions for adding to a first aid kit to make it in that way?
Well, so you would want to have some tape in case you need to put a bandage on, as much as I don't really like bandages because they aren't usually things cats want to wear, and they're also, but there is a possibility of putting it on too tight, which of course can cause big trouble. But tape and sterile gauze sponges, some cleaning solution, not peroxide, which is actually kind of harsh on tissue, but an antiseptic lotion would be nice to potentially clean a wound. You might include even something like silver sulfadiazine, which is a cream that we use for burns in case a cat decides to jump up on a pot stove or a burner might have been left on. Triple antibiotic ointment is okay. Even, again, I'm not real fond of creams on cats because they tend to lick them off, but you could put that on if you wanted to keep a wound clean while you're transporting your cat to a veterinarian. Of course, a bandage scissors, and the bandage scissors is advised over a regular scissors because they're designed in a way that a portion of the scissors would slide under a bandage and be less likely to cut the cat if you're trying to remove a bandage, sort of like what we talked about before about fur.
They kind of look like safety scissors that children would use in a way, so you don't have sharp edges on part of it.
That's right. And then, you know, we haven't really talked much about eye injuries, but having an eye wash around the house is really nice to have for cats because many times when they get little eye discharges, all they really need is some increased lubrication. And so what you're looking for really are just gentle eye wash solutions. You don't want them to have any active ingredients in them, but it's a good thing to have around in case your cat starts blinking and acting like something's in their eye, and that way you can safely try to flush the eye for the cat.
One of the things I have in my first aid kit, I have one in the car, and then I have a major one in the house in case I needed to just scoot out and have this backpack, is a pillowcase. And oftentimes clients will come in with a cat in their arms, and my practice is on a very busy street, and it drives me up the wall. It's like, really, this is not a good idea. Oh, no, the cat's not going to do anything. All you need to do is have a car backfire or to have an emergency vehicle going, you know, wailing by. The cat gets scared. It's out of your arms. Oops, it's in the middle of the street. You don't need that. But I couldn't find the carrier. I said, fine. You always know where your pillow is on your bed. Take out the pillow, you have the case, pop your cat in that, you can put some type of a cord around the top, a cat in a bag, it can still breathe, and if you necessary, if it were a cat that was out on the street or you're trying to scoop it up, you can just put the pillowcase over the cat, scoop it into the bag, and now again, cat in a bag.
Good idea.
Good, I'm glad you like it. One of the other things right now, people across the United States are just being devastated with all of these natural hurricanes and tornadoes and windstorms and rain and snow. So many times people are having to leave their pets at home or aren't planning for the entire family. Please address what people need to do in order to prepare for emergencies for their entire family.
Well, I think probably the first thing that comes to mind is making sure that their cats are properly identified. You know,
perfect.
I'm not a big fan of cats wearing collars, but I think every cat should be microchipped because you just don't know when situations are going to arise that unexpectedly presents an opportunity for a cat to get outside. So I think that would be where I would start, making sure that if my cat were to be left alone and then potentially get out due to something like a hurricane or inclement weather, then I would want to make sure that it was chipped. And one of the most important things about chipping is not just to get the cat microchipped, but to make sure that you go to the websites where these chips are listed and make sure that the owners, you know, that an owner's identification is current. Because my understanding is there is just a huge percentage of people who get their cats microchipped but then never bother to fill out the form correctly and go to the website and fill out the information they're supposed to so that the database is current. So that's
or they move, yes.
Or they move, right. You know, people just forget. You know, it's an oversight, and of course nobody does it on purpose, but it's really important for people to remember that they've got to be updating that information if they do move or if a phone number changes. You know, having a supply of food, maybe an automatic feeder, but I guess I wouldn't worry too much if my cat overindulged if I had to leave it for an extended period of time. But I would definitely leave out fresh water and food. And if I knew that there was bad weather, and I don't live in an area where tornadoes come, but my understanding is that you should be in a central room, you know, in something like a bathroom under a stairway. And if I knew that kind of weather was approaching, I would probably put my cat in a room like that if I couldn't take it with me. But I think I would also, you know, try to go out of my way to find cat-friendly shelters, you know, places that might allow you to take your pet with you, or have an idea. If I lived in an area of the country where I had to relocate, I would find some pet-friendly hotels or motels and just so I was in a position where maybe I could take my cat with me.
And sometimes just having that buddy system. Myself, living in a condo, thankfully I have some great neighbors, and we're in a fire-prone area. So we have ways of getting into each other's homes, and we know where the carriers are and leashes. So if something happens, I feel that somebody's going to get in there, try and grab my pet, because it can happen at any time. Dr. Eigner, I really appreciate you taking the time to chat with us today, especially since it's your birthday. You're talking to us about cats and those people who own those other species, dogs and other creatures also. I think everything that you've been telling us, really that same information goes to them, where they do need to be prepared. They need to have that awareness of what's going on in their pet's environment. If somebody wanted to learn more about the Catalyst Council, where can they go?
They can go to our website, www.catalystcouncil.org. There's an awful lot of information on our site. I think most cat owners would find it very useful and very, very interesting. And we have lots of links, too, to other sites where we think people can learn how to take care of their cats in the best way.
So even if your kitty doesn't appreciate coming to see someone such as Dr. Eigner or myself, it is still very much in their best interest to get them in at least on a yearly basis for a preventive medicine checkup, a wellness exam, making sure that their insides look as good as their outsides. So thank you so much for listening today. Hopefully you'll turn in again next week when we'll have more information on how to make you the best pet owner possible. Thanks for listening.
Pets can be a wonderful addition to your life. Keeping them healthy and happy is important. Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor with veterinary media consultant and veterinarian Dr. Bernadine Cruz. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile, or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets. The Pet Doctor, on demand every week, only on PetLifeRadio.com.